Welcome to the Emmy Louie Show. Today's topic is about, it's part of our series of Be an Architect for a Day series. And I'm going to be the presenter today, and I'd like to talk to you about really how the environment affects your home. And in particular, what I started off as intending to do was do a lecture on how to read blueprints and how to design your house. It really turned out to be a water lecture. And I know that sounds kind of simple. And one of the reasons why it ended up being like a water drainage kind of talk is because of, in response to a lot of the things that are happening around the world right now, we see it on the headlines on news, and maybe we'll hear about some flood or some drought somewhere, or it's raining too much or it's raining too little, global warming, Hurricane Katrina. And if you think about all of those things, that really has to do with water, too much water, too little water, the control of water, lack of control of water, as well as just the natural cycles. So what I'm going to talk about is specifically how water moves around like our home or office, whether it's naturally through the environment, how water drains on our house, how it drains on concrete sidewalks, on our roofs, maybe water retainage in basements, the collecting of water, as well as we're going to talk about what I initially intended to talk about was how to read blueprints and really look at some of the problem areas that that come up in home design. So let's just begin with something that we do a lot, but we don't really think about it, and that's kind of what we're here talking about. We're really trying to raise the consciousness of what is all around us, and we might do something, and we don't realize how precious it is until it's gone, really, or until there's a limited supply of it. Let's say if there is a drought and there's no water, then we really appreciate the water, or if it's too much water, we really appreciate having minimal amounts of water. So let's just start at somewhere that we don't like to really talk about too much, is really the bowels of a building. And the reason why we want to talk about this, and this is not really a fabulous topic to talk about, it's not a glamorous subject, is when it really, people don't care about these things until they really don't work. So that would be things like the plumbing, the electrical systems, our heating systems, and even roads and all that. And that is really the foundation of our lives, if you think about it. If those things don't work, we really cannot go anywhere. We can't drive to somewhere. We can't walk somewhere. Our house might be whatever. Our sanitation is very compromised. We won't be able to grow anything because of lack of water or anything like that. So I want to, it started off with something as simple as really flushing your toilet. And one of the common things when I ask people, even in my lectures or during consultations, and of course all of these topics I'm talking about is a result of the consultations that I have done because I am a feng shui architect. And some of the things that I feel that the public really needs to understand as far as understanding how our houses work. And so let me talk about what happens when your toilet flushes. Well, what happens? And people will say, well, it doesn't matter because, if you don't see it, it's gone. When you flush the toilet, it doesn't matter. It's just down the drain and it's gone. And that's really not the case if you think about it. There's a whole complex situation that happens when you flush the toilet. It's something as simple as that. And when you wash your hands, well, where does the water go? Do people think about this? Well, what I invite you to do is actually think about this, because you're in actuality a part of nature. You're using a natural cycle, which is called actually the hydrological cycle, which is the water cycle. And I know this sounds like a lecture. It sounds really, on the surface, really boring, but I really want you to understand this, because we are really a part of that cycle. And there are cycles in life, whether, you know, we're born and we die and all that. So this one is a very simple cycle and has to do with water and how water moves. So let's just take, for example, that you use the drain, right? Use the sink and the water goes through. How does that work? When it goes through the pipes, it generally goes, the water goes to, probably if you're in the city, it goes, ends up in a sewage treatment plant and gets recycled. And then that's the simple part about it. Another part about it, actually I'm talking about the sanitation cycle. Another way that the water recycles back to you is it might, if you're in the country, it goes to a septic tank. And then the water goes into, the gray water goes into a leaching field, and then it that water goes back and gets absorbed into the atmosphere. So let's go back. Let's talk about the hydrological cycle. So how water moves. Let's just say it rains. And the rain hits the roof. The water goes into the ground. It seeps into the ground. Then it evaporates. It goes into the clouds, and then it rains again, and then it rains on the roof. So that's the cycle of the hydrological cycle. Now, it could be something a little more involved. Let's just say, again, it rains. It rains on your roof. The water on your roof goes down a stream, and then it goes down a river. It goes down to a lake, and maybe it goes to an ocean, and then the ocean, the water evaporates, and it goes back into the clouds. And all at the same time, when it hits the ground, there's water evaporating all the time. It's called water vapor. And then goes back up, and it continues that cycle of rain coming down and then evaporates and goes back and forth. And that is the hydrological cycle. And there are more complex models of it, but that's pretty much how it works. I mean, water travels downhill, and then it evaporates, goes back up into the sky, and then comes back down. And so the next part is the sanitation cycle, which I was almost getting into. And one of the ways we talked about how it goes to a sewage treatment plant. That's one option. Another option is it goes to a septic tank. And, of course, a very simple option is if we're talking about if you did number two, and I know this is not necessarily a pleasant subject, but let's talk about the sanitation cycle. So the very natural way is if you just did a number two right outside on the ground. And so naturally the ground just, it degrades, and then it goes into the soil, and then that's it. But because we have a modern society, we have evolved into using sanitation with pipes and everything. So those are really, basically, I can think of the three options in how water gets through your house or not through, if you don't have a house. So one is through the sewage treatment plant, one is the septic, and one is just, you know, going out camping and just doing the number two outside. So when we talk about water, why it's so important to think about this water, and you have to think about in context, unfortunately, of Hurricane Katrina, because it is a wake-up call in a lot of ways. And a lot of things don't happen or do happen because of what we understand or what we don't understand in our education. And I'm really here to really talk to you about just education, about how water flows. And I know this sounds really obvious. It sounds really obvious, but you really have to think about it in your own lives. For example, you hear people about, well, their basement is flooding maybe, or their neighbor is they did something and the neighbor's water is kind of like it's draining too much to their own property, your property or something. Or there's always something related to water as a result of it not being in sync or in balance. So let's talk about water, how it flows. Okay? And let's talk about water when it flows. I know this sounds obvious, but water takes the path of least resistance. When it's on the ground, it takes the path of least resistance. And it generally does not go uphill. Okay, it does not go uphill. And it only goes uphill as water vapor. For the most part, it really doesn't. Water just goes downhill. And water is really a friend or a foe, depending on its amount and where it's located. Isn't that really amazing if you think about it? Think about just all the different variations of water in its different forms, in the forms of, let's say, drought, in the forms of cisterns, in the form of erosion, in the form of water damage, in the form of floods, in the form of taking a bath, in the form of swimming in a lake or looking at a lake or riding a boat in a lake or being at the beach. Those are all different forms of water collection, or how we enjoy water or how we don't enjoy the water. And water seems to be our friend when we are able to manage it, when we are able to turn it off and on, and it comes in moderation to our convenience. It seems to be a foe when it's inconvenient for us. Let's say if we're doing something and we are planning to have a picnic and then it rains. But if you think about it, that's just really the cycle of nature. And we all have cycles in our lives. And if you see rain as probably a foe, or if you see something as a foe, it's really a signal or a time to kind of slow down and really think about what is nature trying to tell you? What are the signs and the signals about it? Because it's really just doing its own thing. And so likewise, your own body, you're doing your own thing too. I mean, you have, if you're a female, you have a menstrual cycle, you have your cycles, or if you have a child, you have 9 months to generally conceive a child or to make a baby. And so these are all just natural cycles. And when we think about the weather and how we don't or do like the weather is just doing its own thing. It just so happens that it's not convenient for you and your schedule. So maybe you just got to slow down a little and just kind of think about what's going on in your life, and that it's a way to reconnect to our natural cycle. And so I am Emmy Louie, and we will be back and we'll talk about more about the cycles of water, and talk about water drainage and how really it's important to get reconnected to nature and the cycles of life. We'll be back. Welcome back. I'm Emmy Louie, and we're talking about the cycles of nature and how it really affects how we live our lives. This is our Be an Architect for a Day series, and just thinking about how we live our lives and how we live or don't live in sync with nature. And it's something to think about as far as when the weather doesn't quote-unquote cooperate in our to our liking, and in point of fact, it's just doing what it normally does. And so if you think about it, the moon waxes and wanes every 20 days and whatnot, and we all have these natural cycles. And so whenever, again, I invite you, whenever you think that there's inclement weather that is not to our liking, that's just the earth being it's the earth. And it's time to kind of check in with what you're doing in your lives. It really is a sign for you to just kind of slow down and reflect on just nature and its awesome beingness. So what I wanted to talk to you about was about water drainage and how that really affects our lives. One of the things that I learned in architecture school early on is that when it comes to plumbing systems in our house, and you know, we were talking about flushing the toilet and everything, is that there's a saying that goes, all SH blank blank flows downhill. So all water flows downhill pretty much, and that's all you really need to know about plumbing. I mean, I know that sounds like a simple way to think about plumbing and, you know, about your toilets and all that. But the water does have to go somewhere. The water does have to go somewhere. And we have to be very conscious about where that water goes or where it doesn't go. And one of the things that we hear about, or at least I hear about, is runoff. And so what is runoff? When we talk about, you know, forest degradation and water runoff and that's bad, or soil depletion and whatnot, what does that all mean? You know, it sounds like these words are just kind of thrown about. What does that mean? What is runoff? Now, runoff is generally, it seems to be a negative term. And the very simple example of runoff, and this is, let me just go very simply about what is runoff. Take, for example, that you have your, it's raining. Let's just take, for example, it's raining, and you have an umbrella. And so you're holding the umbrella, and the rain is on the umbrella, and where you're standing is dry. Right, because the umbrella is covering you from getting wet. Now, all the areas where the areas right under the umbrella are dry, but everywhere around it is wet. And at the same time, the water is running off of that umbrella because it's hitting the umbrella. And so that means whatever water that did not hit that was hit the umbrella, all of that water is going to the outskirts of the umbrella. It's falling off the umbrella. So that's a very simple, innocuous example of runoff. The thing is that it's not all that simple when it comes to development, quote-unquote, the often bad word or good word called development, because that umbrella, the runoff from that umbrella, can be football fields wide and big, such as in housing developments or any type of, any kind of development when there's a building. And so that water has to go somewhere when it goes on the roof. And that's where there's the imbalance that we're talking about, the runoff. A very simple example of also this runoff is that when, let's just say you're living in a subdivision and you have a house, and you want to make sure that whatever you do, you're not directing more water to your neighbor, you know, at least unwanted water. And that's the same thing when you buy a house. You don't want to be in the direct line of somebody else's runoff because of the activities that they do. And that's why people kind of, neighbors or communities do complain about runoff, because just because next door, there might be some building that's going up, it seems to not affect you, but a lot of their soot and the dust and the water that they're diverting is going to you. So in effect, it does really affect you. And that's why we talk about lakes and air, because all of these things really do affect you, because there's really no, when it comes to our air throughout the world, there's really no door to close it off from some other piece of air. I mean, the air that we breathe, you know, could be recirculated somewhere, you know, in China or something because of how the air currents go. So there's, you know, you can't really do something necessarily and say, okay, well, we'll just bury that and we'll just close the door. It's really not that simple when it comes to air and water, because the water does transfer to somewhere. It flows downhill, like we were talking about. Another good example, and we're talking about kind of somewhat touchy subjects where you might have some industry that happens, and then there's water that's quote-unquote polluted, and then it flows downhill, and then somewhere down the road, down the river, it's drinking water for somebody else. So these water issues do make a difference, and they're often controversial, or they're points of contention, because these are things that we share it. We share the water and the air. And when we realize that we do that, the better off we are, because then we feel like then we take responsibility. And it's important to take responsibility for these things. So anyway, so let's talk about runoff a little more. So the reason why big buildings are problematic in a lot of ways is because, unlike the ground absorbs water. And when it absorbs the water, the water evaporates, and then, again, going back to the hydrological cycle, it rains, and then the whole cycle of nature continues. But when you have concrete and buildings, they kind of change that. And one of the statistics is that when you're in a city that's full of concrete, the average temperature of that city is a few degrees lower than if you were in nature. And this is pretty much understood. It's because there's just so much concrete. And the buildings or pavement or roofs don't absorb the water, and they divert the water somewhere else. And so the thing with concrete is that you want to only use it only when you need to. And it's really good for walking on. It's really good for driving on. But you use it only when you need it, because it's better if it's natural, if there's just grass, or if there's, because then it's just more in harmony with nature. Once you put the concrete on there, it really stops grass from growing on there, because you have to put either concrete or grass. And concrete, you have to use very carefully, because it gets very hot in the summer when you use concrete. And we were talking about in the city on how when you use a lot of concrete, the temperature, when you're standing on a concrete sidewalk, the temperature is vastly different than if you were on a lawn. A good example is when we talk about, you know, it's so hot in the summer that I can fry an egg on the sidewalk. Certainly you can't fry an egg on a lawn, because if you're on a sidewalk, a concrete sidewalk, it's at least 20 degrees higher than if you're on a lawn. And so there are a lot of, if you think about it, negatives with using pavement material. And use it only when you have to. Don't go hog wild and just use it nilly-willy in any which way. And so that is what we talk about in regards to runoff. So I want to talk a little more about runoff and talk about how it affects the roofs, because a lot of times we don't really, most of us lay people, most of us don't really understand roofs until it doesn't work and when we have a roof leakage. So anyway, I'll be back. I'm Emmy Louie, and we'll talk about those kind of things that are problematic with having a roof leak and what to do about it. I'll be back. Uh, I'm back, and this is Emmy Louie, Feng Shui Architect, and we're talking about roofs, the topic that many people look at, but they never think about what a roof does and how important it is, and that the roof is really the first line of defense against water, the rain, as well as the sun. And it's one of those things, and we're all of these things I'm talking about are things that we really take for granted until they're out of balance or if it doesn't work. So I wanted to ask you if you've ever had a roof leak before, and you didn't know where the water came from. And I've had that happen when I was renting out an apartment in college, and where there was a roof leakage. And it seems to be pretty much problematic because you don't really know where the water could come from. And the weird part about it is when there's a roof leak, the water could travel across the entire house before it goes into your ceiling. And that's where the challenge is in regarding the leakage of water in a roof. And one of the things why I'm even talking about roofs is because in my consultations, I often consult with people about roofs. It seems that many people don't really understand how roofs work. One of the jokes I told someone, it was a man, and he said, well, a lot of women probably don't understand roofs because you can't decorate a roof. And I thought it was interesting because if you don't able to decorate it, you're not able to own up to it, so you don't really understand it very much. And so I thought that was interesting. But we really do need to understand more about roofs. One of the things we were talking about is that all water slopes downhill. And with roofs, they all need to slope. They all need to slope, meaning they all have to have a little incline in order so the water can run off of it. And the only exception I can think of right now is that if it was a roof deck, then it might be a garden deck or something, and it holds like a little dirt, so it doesn't have to be sloped. But in general, even that, most surfaces that have water on it have to slope. It's very natural for anywhere around the world on that it slopes. Otherwise, that's just the way it is. I mean, as far as just sloping. And so a roof always needs to slope, and the slope of it is called the pitch. And it's basically a trigonometry function. I hope I don't lose you here, but hang in there and just listen to me. But the pitch is based on the rise and the run of a slope. And the rise and the run is the horizontal distance and the run is the vertical distance. And that vertical horizontal slope really determines the character of the house. It's a very simple thing, but that actually, you actually see a home, the roof of a home, more than most things. And a good analogy is actually your hair, because your hair is similar to a roof of a house, because your hair covers half of your head. And hair offers to be a simple thing, and so is the roof. But it often determines your character. A lot of people, when they see you, they kind of see you, your hair first, almost before they see your eyes necessarily. And so that's the same thing with a roof as to a house. And the slope of the roof is generally a function of the drainage of water. And here we were talking again about, we're going back to the water drainage issue, because in northern climates where there is snow, the roofs of houses are generally steeper. So they're usually a 1-to-1 ratio, meaning that if the slope of a roof goes from one point, and if it goes like 12 feet, it'll go 12 feet as high. So that's the pitch of the roof. Likewise, that's called a 12-to-12 or 1-to-1 pitch. And if there's not that much snow in, a, let's say, more of a tropical climate, the roofs could be a 4 to 12 slope or a 12 to 3 slope or a 12 to 4 slope. So the slope, again, if you think about it, the roof is a function of how much water goes on it. So if there's more snow or there's more rain, the tendency is for that slope of the roof to be steeper. And so these roof things, the design, is not really an accident. It's based on how much water hits the roof. The thing with roofs and the problem with many roofs and why we don't seem to understand it very much, and let's go on a little more, because when I worked at an architecture firm, we did roof inspections and we designed roofs. And I know this firsthand because one of the problems with roofs in general, why we're not really aware of it, is because it's not very easy to get to. You generally need to have a ladder to get to the roof. And how many ladders are you going to have around? It's so much easier to inspect, let's say, a garage or a sidewalk or a room because we can walk to it. But because it's somewhere that we're not necessarily have access to, we're not aware of as much. And so that's one of the problems with why we don't understand roofs that much, is because it's just harder to go there. And then roofs are harder, too, because if you have a sloped roof, if you want to try to attempt to walk on it, it's not a flat surface. So there's a slope to it, and so there's a tendency that you could fall off. And so anybody who is afraid of heights would have a problem with being on a roof. Another problem with roofs, why we don't understand it very much, is that if we have a relatively flat roof, even at a slope, some of those materials that are used on flat roofs are downright smelly. If it's used with like bitumen or tar, it's not really the best place to be in a lot of ways. And those things are changing too, because we're talking about green roofs and putting grass on roofs. But access is a major problem. And also, one of the problems with roofs, as I was alluding to, going back to the leak in the roof, is that the weird part about when a roof leaks in your home is really it just takes one opening to have a leak in a roof. You don't need to have a gaping hole to have a roof leakage. All you need is just one little opening. And that can be very insidious as far as the problem with roofs. In other words, that entire... it's kind of like the umbrella analogy. If you want to have one little hole in your umbrella, that's going to be a problem. And so that whole roof has to be rather seamless in a lot of ways and protect you from water. If there's one opening, that water could drip down and it could go across somewhere in your ceiling and leak down. Another thing with roofs is if it doesn't work, and we were talking about why the roof is the first line of defense, against the sun and the water, is that if a roof doesn't work, there can be very serious water damage. And many things are rendered useless after water damage. And so those are some of the things to think about, the challenges of roofs, and just being very aware of how these things function. And the next time you're in a home, you're in an office, it's not to think about really just the next activity, but look in your surroundings and really look at how things are functioning so perfectly well and really appreciate all of those things. And then, so the next thing we're going to talk about, we're talking about the drainage of water on roofs. And we're talking about runoff. And remember we were saying about how runoff, if it hits the umbrella, and how all of that water basically has to go on the outskirts of the umbrella in order to keep yourself dry, and that's no different for a building, that the water has to go somewhere, whether it's a large concrete parking lot or a large roof. And that's one of the reasons why landscape architects or architects do complain about too much concrete, because the water, that cycle, the hydrological cycle of the ground absorbing the water is dramatically disturbed. And it's so important to have that greenery because it balances out the natural cycle of that hydrological cycle. Now let's talk about basements, because when I've done consultations, basements tend to be another thing. I would love to do a poll where, you know, how many basements are dank and damp and how many of them flood and everything. And the great way to actually select a house, and I use this technique all the time, is when you're going out to buy a house or renting an apartment, is really go to the place when it's raining. You can see a lot of things when it's really down, it's pouring with rain. One of the things you can see is look at where the water is going. Observe where the water is going. Does it pool around where you're walking, or does it not? Because if it does pool around where you're walking or it's pooling around the house, then those are kind of danger signals, because you really don't want the water around where you are, except if you're taking a shower or you're at a pond or something. For all intents and purposes, near a sidewalk, you want it drained away from the sidewalk. And you want the water to drain away from the building. And that's one of the things that architects do talk about when you drain water. You always want to drain it away from the building. I know that sounds really simple, and you're thinking, Emmy, that sounds ridiculously simple. What do you think we are? However, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised when people complain about their basements flooding and everything. You'd be surprised, because when we talk about runoff, when we talk about slopes, these kind of issues happen again and again, that water does seep through to the foundation and it gets the building wet and the basement wet. So keep water away from the foundation walls. Just keep it away from the building. Slope it as much as possible. I know this sounds very obvious, but when it's said and done, some people don't do it, okay? So what I want you to do when it's raining is get a floor plan or a bird's eye view of your house or apartment or office or whatever, and use arrows to show where the water is going when it rains. And really, water should not stagnate around your house. That's really not good, unless it's very deliberate or something. But even then, a pond should not be stagnating anyway. There should be movement in the pond. And stagnating water is never good feng shui. So what you want to do is you draw arrows, and you draw the arrows where the water is going, and you want to redirect the water away from your home via swale, pipes, berms, or plantings. And you want to redirect the water. Now let's move on to another type of water collecting. So far we've talked about how water moves naturally, how it hits our house or roof, how it goes on concrete sidewalks, how it collects in basements not to our liking. Now what I want to talk about is collecting of water. How important and how we want to really want to kind of look at it from a natural standpoint. And so I am Emmy Louie, and we'll talk about dams and ponds and cisterns and all that, and I'll be back, and we'll talk about that. Welcome back to Be an Architect for a Day series, and we're talking about water, how to manage it, drain it, collect it, and then we'll move on to a little bit of kind of blueprints and education about that. The next thing I want to talk about is really about dams and ponds, and that I know this sounds really obvious, but you know, we just got to think about these things as applied, because when you look at certain things and we say, well, this didn't happen or this did happen, well, what went wrong is because a lot of times we're not really listening to nature. One of the things is that if you had a choice between a natural lake and a natural pond, that's always better than a man-made one. And one of the reasons is because a natural lake and a natural pond is carved by the forces of nature. And also, when you think about this pond and lake situation, the Earth is always changing and it's always moving in a geological time period. I know it doesn't look like the lake is changing in our lifetimes, in our lifetime, but it really is. It has its own life and it has its own cycle. And so that's one thing to think about when it comes to dams and ponds. So one of the things that I wanted to tell you about as far as dams is that you really don't want to dam up anything if you don't have to. I know this sounds obvious. And I know insurance people will not want to hear this, but if something can break, it probably will. It's just a matter of time and maintenance. So the bigger a dam you make or bigger bridge, then the more maintenance you probably need to do on it. So if you want to make your life simple, you probably want to design something in a simplest way so that it can kind of self-monitor itself. But that's something to think about. But usually the best designs really mimic nature, and they have minimal human intervention. It's really modulated by natural cycles of climate. And one of the things when we talk about these man-made structures is that you want to solve the problem or the issue that you have. Remember that you don't really want to use a bulldozer if all you need is a shovel. So you don't really want to go full, because then it creates more problems. And I know there's a term for that, you know, and it might be our whole modern society. You don't want to solve one problem and just to create another bigger problem. And that's something to think about when we talk about solving problems. And so one of the Murphy's Laws that we were talking about is if it can break, it probably will during its lifetime. So it's really a matter of when or minimizing it as much as possible and basically working the numbers out in your favor. So you really want to just play it safe and not really mess with Mother Nature in a very big way when it comes to dams and ponds. And one thing is it's in relationship to even where you live and whether it's in a city or in a town and where your town is. It's always better not to be downwind or downstream of anything offensive that can leak or break. And I know that sounds really obvious, but it's something to really consider when you're making a choice about where you want to live or work or whatnot. And being upwind and uphill is always better than being downhill and downwind. The more you are dependent on artificial man-made props, the more maintenance is required. So, of course, the best design is when there is less maintenance. And we're talking, it could be at a very large scale. We're talking about, big dams, or we're talking about anything that requires human intervention. And so we're talking about collecting water. And another way I was thinking about collecting water, and this is actually becoming a little more popular when it comes to our own house, is that we have several types of water. And I know in our house we talk about gray water, and I want to tell you more about that as far as education of water is concerned and how our pipes are working, is that we have potable water, which is water that we can drink, and then we have gray water, which is water that you've used, that you've washed your hands with, and you can water the plants with, and maybe it's collected in cisterns. And then you have black water, which is the number two. When we do the number two, that becomes black water. And I want to just bring this out in the forefront because I really want to discuss this because this is really important. And one of the problems right now in our entire society as far as plumbing is concerned when we build our houses is that gray water and black water is treated the same way. It basically becomes the sewage, and we waste a lot of water that could have been, we could have reused the gray water. And so my hope is that we will be building more of these green buildings where we're able to recycle the gray water and separate that out, because it's just something that it's just a simpler design that will solve more problems instead of it being thrown away, recycled back into nature again and going one full cycle before we're able to use it as potable water. So again, there's three types of water: potable water, gray water, and black water. And what we want to do is separate the gray water and be able to use that again and again before it goes into as black water. So that is a summary about our water drainage management system. And I wanted to go with over with you certain other things about, about the other types of systems in your home. We talked about plumbing, and then we talked we didn't talk about the other things, which is the different types of systems in our home, which is there's plumbing, there's heating and ventilation and air conditioning, there's electrical, there is structural systems, as well as there's what we would call landscape architecture. And let me explain all of these things and why they actually go, they're all these different systems, but they really, they go together as one, and how each one is so important, and you really need to understand how it relates to each other. So we talked about plumbing, and this was what I talked would say would be like the plumbing lecture, really. The heating and ventilation is basically all our air conditioning systems, and that's a separate entity. There are people, there are professionals that design the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, and there are people that design the plumbing. There are also, those are generally called mechanical engineers. And the electrical is designed by electrical engineers. And electrical is anything that has to do with electricity and our light fixtures. And one of the things in regards to the heating, the mechanical engineering, these are specialties that basically people go to college for, and they're separate specialties right now. There are people that do the heating, ventilation, air conditioning design, as well as there's different people that install it. There's an electrical engineer that designs electrical wiring, and then there's the electrician that installs it. Then there are structure engineers that design the structure, and then they're basically carpenters or framers that install the structure. And you see how this is building. It's getting more complex as we go on and on. And then there's the landscape architect that may design or the architect that designs the gutters and manage, or the civil engineer that designs the water and how it flows back into the hydrological cycle that we were talking earlier about. And so what I wanted to kind of leave you with today is really about design, and that it's a very, it's simple yet it's kind of complex, and I want you to see it in this context. It's very similar to our bodies. Our bodies have a digestive system, and that's what I would term the plumbing system of our of the house, as well as our body. And then our electrical system in our house is the electricity. Electrical system in our body is like the neurons. And then the heating and ventilation in our house is similar to like our sweat glands and our respiratory system. And so you can see how there's a relationship to our bodies and how it's not just a bunch of things in our house. I don't want you to see it as that. It's a very important part of how the organism that we call the temple of where we live and how it breathes and it's alive. And so what I wanted to tell you is that with blueprints, with organizing the planning of your house, is that you want to make the major decisions up front, and you don't want to make changes later on in the process, because you're just going to involve many more people down the road because you've got the heating and the electrical as well as the structural. So those are some of the things that I hope you have an understanding about. And it was my pleasure to tell you about how these things really work about the water drainage cycle, the hydrological cycle, the sanitation cycle, as well as how the water collects on roofs, how it collects on concrete sidewalks, in your basement, how to collect water in general, and how we really need to understand this whole process in relationship to our overall weather patterns, and how we need to respect nature and really kind of slow down when the weather is not doesn't coincide with the convenience of our own lifestyle. And this is Emmy Louie, Feng Shui Architect. I hope you understand a little more about basically how water is so important in our lives. I wish you a really great week, and I'll see you next time. Namaste.